if you have a luster like, then obviously you would be listening to The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com. It is September 27th, 2016. As always, we are joined by the encyclopedia of movies, it seems, Chris Whetton. Chris Whetton, how are you?
I have a lust for movies.
He has a lust for movies, and he will watch all the movies and still have time to go to a Bucks game that we lost.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, go Tampa.
Leave early because it's embarrassing.
Leave early because it's a rain out because we've never seen lightning before. So yeah, we're The Real Thing. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. THEREELTHINGMLR. We thank you for your patronage.
Thank you.
Let's look at who was your top grossing movie this weekend, and it would be...
Oh, gross.
Magnificent Seven.
Oh.
The reboot of the reboot of the original.
Yeah.
Which was Kurosawa. Who directed the 60s one?
Shit, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Oh,
not off the top of my head. I'm not, like, you know, one of these people that's in love with that movie.
But you have seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I've seen all three versions now.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw Magnificent Seven this week.
Ah, okay.
Thought it was good. Enjoyed it. It's not, like, it's nothing that's going to blow you away. And it's not even, like, a great... It doesn't feel... It's weird. It's a Western, but it doesn't feel like a Western. Like, they didn't go out of their way to sort of make it all Western-y, you know? Like, it feels very modern. Sort of the dialogue and the characters feel very modern.
Huh, okay.
In a Western world, you know. The action feels pretty modern. Having said that, I enjoyed it very much. Like, it's hard not to enjoy a Western action movie, and it is a Western action movie, with Denzel Washington, Chris Pratt, Ethan Hawke, Vincent D'Onofrio, who, you know, sort of steals scenes that he's in.
Still, yeah.
And then Peter Sarsgaard, who I've always loved, is the villain in the movie.
Ah, he's got a good villain. Good villain face.
He's a great villain.
Yeah,
and he is very, very enjoyable to watch in it. It's not bad. You know what I came away. What I was thinking with while I was watching it so much was, this is basically Suicide Squad. Like this.
Ah.
It's essentially the same thing, but this movie does a much better for each character, giving you a little 3-4 minute scene. As they're introducing them, that little 3-4 minute scene just sort of encompasses their whole personality and introduces you to them in a much better, more slick way than Suicide Squad did. Pretty much trying to accomplish the exact same thing. Band of misfits getting together to take down the man.
Nice.
You know? Like, that's what it is.
Okay, okay.
Works way better.
What about, I mean, I'm not going to be able to compare it to Hell or High Water, although that would be a Western, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about it last show.
Yeah, I guess, again, like, another, like, sub-genre of Westerns, which is, it's, like, sort of the modern West Texas Western.
Yeah, you know, like, No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, nobody's riding cowboys, but it is a West... Or nobody's riding cowboys. We're talking about... That's Brokeback Mountain territory there. cowboy riding.
Mangoo Gulch.
Nobody's riding horses, is what I meant to say.
Oh, okay.
It is a Western... you know, I mean, they're driving Camaros and shit, but
yeah.
It's still a Western. So
what about,
it feels like a Western.
How about...
No Camaros in Magnificent Seven.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what about...
Comanches. Yeah.
Mm. Now, I've heard two things. Mm. I've heard that this movie is extremely violent.
Pretty violent.
Is it really for a PG-13?
I mean, it's got some, like... I wasn't expecting there to be as much killing as there was, given that it's PG-13.
Okay,
what I mean?
Okay, then let me back up. That's what I heard. I heard that there's a lot of bad guys that die during this movie.
Yeah, yeah, and some
Vengeance is
and some good guys, like some sort of characters at the beginning of the movie that sort of set the storyline in action. Peter Sarsgaard, you know, sort of blowing people away. Kind of shocked me a little bit.
Okay.
I just felt like it was going to be, you know, oftentimes Westerns are a little bit more conservative, a little bit more reserved, especially in the first 3/4 of the movie, and you get to a shootout or something like that. This is not that.
Okay.
You start with some shooting and some violence, and then there's, you know, like some laughs and a little bit more shooting and violence and a lot more laughs. And that's the thing that's fun about it, is a very... And that's sort of what I mean. Maybe another thing that makes it feel more modern is the amount of comedy that's in it. You know, Chris Pratt's got some good... All the characters have a lot of lines
really?
That are sort of funny. Yeah, they're all sort of cracking jokes and cracking wise.
Even Denzel?
Denzel probably the least, but even he has a couple of... He's kind of the quiet one of the group. He is the leader. And he's not like, you know, Clint Eastwood in Good, Bad, and the Ugly quiet, but he is not crack and wise like the other characters are. But even he has a couple lines that are sort of funny, yeah.
What about the other question that I had was that you were talking about how the characters are fleshed out better than Suicide Squad. What about Hateful Eight?
I mean fleshed out in terms of their introduction. In terms of you sort of orienting yourself to the characters, the movie orients the viewer to the characters.
Oh, okay.
Which is, it gives you, okay, here's the new character, I'm going to give you a 4 or 5 minute scene that sort of introduces you to him, but also encompasses what you're going to get from him in a little 4 minute scene here.
Gotcha.
It does that. That's what Suicide Squad did not do, in my opinion, and I think in your opinion too. It was confusing. It was like, wait, who's that? That's the guy who can climb anything?
Yeah.
You know, like, and you didn't know, you weren't oriented to these guys and what they could do.
Gotcha. Now, who would you say, I mean, it's an ensemble cast, and it made...
Yeah.
Made 34.7, so rounded up to 35 million.
Yeah, I don't know. What's the budget on something like this? I don't know.
Well.
I mean, they got to build all this shit from scratch. It's got to be at least $100 million, I would think.
And you think?
I would think that it's at least it feels like a... It does not feel like a cheaply made movie. I mean, it feels like there was some money behind it.
Take a guess.
I would guess $100 million.
108.
Turns out I'm a genius again.
You are a genius at this. John Sturges directed the 1960 version.
Well, should have known that.
And apparently, it was obviously number one this weekend. Among wide releases, this is the 13th straight $20 million opening for Denzel.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with Denzel. It really is. I mean...
Well, the other thing, too, is that I have heard that his portrayal, his character in this movie is... I mean, he's... mailing it in? I don't know if that's probably the wrong terminology to use, but I mean, is he, you know, he's Denzel. I'll watch Denzel on anything sign on scene.
I will too, and I don't agree with that. Like I said, I mean, it is a Western.
Yeah.
And his character is probably
the
more...
The quiet one.
He's more the archetype Western, you know, cowboy than any of the rest of them. The rest of them have a lot of comic relief and, you know, some more than others, but his really is probably, if you're just a guy who loves Westerns, his is the character that you would be most familiar and comfortable with.
Right, like, as Tony Soprano would say, he's the strong, silent type.
He is the strong, silent Gary Cooper type.
Nice.
Very much so. Very serious.
Okay.
Sort of reluctantly goes into this job and sort of pulls all these guys together because he feels like it's the right thing to do and so forth and so on.
Okay.
I did not feel like he was mailing it in. I thought it was Denzel doing a version of that character, and I thought it was fantastic. And that's what I was about to say, which is, when does Denzel mail it in? I guess you could say the one he did.
Two Guns?
Yeah. Well, okay. That's a pretty good example of him mailing it in.
Knock that one down a notch.
Now, even that, though, did you see that movie? Like, even that.
No, it looked kind of fun, though.
He and Wahlberg, had some decent chemistry together. Like,
yeah.
I was actually way less into the one where he was working at Home Depot or whatever it was.
Or the Equalizer?
The Equalizer. I was not so into that.
Same director, though.
I know.
Antoine Fuqua.
I know it was.
Fucking training.
And I like Antoine Fuqua. Yeah,
Training Day is legit.
Yeah, no, I like him. I've always liked him. I've liked pretty much everything I've ever seen from him. And I didn't dislike Home Depot Killer. I just thought...
Born supremacy.
I just thought it was sort of low energy, to borrow a term from Donald Trump about Jeb Bush. I thought it was sort of low energy, ironically, for an actor.
Well, then just do coke before you get on the debate stage and stuff. So, yeah, exactly. And, the real thing, I'm more like radio.com, does not condone that type of drug use. Do all the drugs you want. I don't give a fuck.
Please.
How about... Okay. So, Antoine Fuqua has done Magnificent Seven. Did you see Southpaw?
No, didn't see Southpaw.
Okay, but it's got Jake Gyllenhaal.
Like, such a downer.
How bad
could it
be?
You know what I mean? Like, and it also felt like one of those movies where it's like, haven't we seen this before? I mean, it felt like somebody was in a room, they're like, hey, Raging Bull meets 8 Mile.
Yeah,
let's make that. You know what I mean? I just wasn't into it. Wasn't interested.
Equalizer, Olympus Has Fallen, Brooklyn's Finest, never saw that.
Olympus Has Fallen, not a bad movie. Yeah.
Shooter?
Got itself a... I like Shooter. You know what?
Okay.
Like, it's one of those movies like Two Guns. It's like...
That's why I'm going through...
Late at night on cable, 4 beers deep, that Shooter comes on. You're enjoying that.
I'm going through his filmography as a director. King Arthur. Did you see King Arthur?
Yeah, and it wasn't bad. I liked the King Arthur movie.
Tears of the Sun?
Tears of the Sun was the sort of follow-up to Training Day, and not fantastic, but not a bad movie.
Shit, he started off with the fucking Replacement Killers.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I like Replacement Killers, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Bait. Oh, Bait with Jamie Foxx.
Jamie Foxx.
Oh, fuck me.
Oh, yeah. This guy makes fun movies.
Yeah.
And that's what Magnificent... You take all those movies and combine them, that's the feel you get from Magnificent Seven. It's not anything that's going to win any Oscars, and it's not even anything that fanboys are going to go nuts over, but
right.
Hard to argue with it when you're sitting there, you know?
Oh, shit. And just as a reminder, because The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com has reminded you guys before, Antoine Fuqua also directed the music video for Gangsta's Paradise by Coolio in 1995. Wow. So now you know.
Mm. Boom, 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 boom.
Storks was number two for anyone that cares. 21 million, then Sully, then Bridget Jones's Baby, then Snowden.
Storks, you know who wrote and directed Storks?
You told me, I forgot.
Nicholas Stoller, who wrote and directed Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which
and
is
they...
very intriguing to me. I'm probably going to take my kids to see that this weekend. I'll report back.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, Forgetting Sarah Marshall is like one of the funniest movies. And Neighbors, he wrote and directed that too. And now he's making a kids movie.
Nice.
It's pretty sweet.
All right. I'll tell you what isn't sweet, Jay. You know, it's... What is not sweet is when love breaks up, love... is supposed to spring eternal, and then and then everyone feigns interest and gives a shit. We'll just touch on it very briefly, because I feel like I don't care.
Sounds like he touched on his son very briefly.
Oh, right.
Oh, shit.
See, now I heard about that. All right, so Brad Pitt and Angelina
Jolie. It sounds
like
it's getting blown out of proportion.
Well, yeah, I heard that there were child abuse allegations, which like got like my fucking... spider sense started like tingling and shit, like kids are being beaten, what the shit.
Yeah,
but then I also heard that
rush into a phone booth and put your costume on.
Yeah, that there were witnesses on the plane where he was yelling at the kids and he was drunk apparently, that were contradictory to what was being said, and they're splitting $500 million. That's the thing that I okay, look, they were collecting kids like Pokemon for many years. They're splitting $500 million. This is okay, I understand that you love your wife very much, but this is the reason why I don't get married.
Because
this shit fucking happens, and it's really, really just beyond me.
I honestly thought they were weird to begin with. Like, I don't know. I've not read all about it. I don't know all the stories. I'm a child of divorce, so I'm sad when anyone gets divorced. It's, you know, it's a bummer. Sad for the kids. But I feel like you said, they were collecting kids. That's sort of what it felt like. It didn't feel like...
They're all in different colors.
They're all different colors, yeah. I mean, it's like... It felt like a collection. Like,
yeah.
We need to get one, you know, from... We need an Asian. We need a black. We need... one of these things is going to be trans.
You could
Isn't one of them trans?
Just get a passport. That's all you need. You don't need to adopt the kid from the country that you want to go visit. Or
right.
You want to do humanitarian work.
Collect action figures or something.
Right.
Like, you know, I mean, I do think one of them is trans. Like, some shit like that. Or it felt very... like you said, like a collection.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a little bit weird. They've been together for going on 15 years or whatever it is. Here's the best thing I can say about them.
Yeah.
I like Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I was going to ask you, have you seen Mr. and Mrs. Smith?
I enjoyed it. Like,
That's where it set it all off, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, where they met, right? So he was with, what's her name?
Jennifer Aniston?
Yeah, Rachel. Yeah, he was with her. And
okay, wait.
She was banging a statue of Edgar Allan Poe or whatever the hell she was doing back then.
Speaking of which, I don't know that you know this, but you called Jennifer Aniston Rachel. I'm assuming that's her character's name from the show Friends.
Yeah.
Right. Never seen, not a one.
You never seen one episode of Friends?
Not one episode.
Back in the day?
No.
Now, I can understand these days because, you know, I mean, like, media is all over the place. You can watch whatever you want. But back in the day, like, when we were in high school, it was like... everybody watched Friends. Everybody watched Seinfeld, Friends, and Frasier.
Seinfeld. Never saw Frasier.
Never saw Frasier.
No.
Frasier holds up better than Seinfeld.
I'm sure that it does. But getting back to what I'm saying is that, you know, like, Friends is, like, immensely popular, and
each
one of those actors can do whatever they want for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, among our generation, it's very unusual to find someone who's never seen an episode of Friends.
Yeah. But anyway, so apparently she's no longer with him, and now they're broken up or some bullshit.
Yeah.
This is the other thing, too.
These kids were going to be fucked up anyway, and now there's a divorce, and going to be even more fucked up. I feel sorry for the kids. I don't feel sorry for Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt.
They had hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, no kidding.
To console them. But the other thing that I had mentioned on Hippo Juice, which is coming up next on More Like Radio, last week, is that so Brad Pitt's doing this movie with Marion Cotillard,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Mall from Inception, and they're doing the movie Allied. And then she had to go and comment about a terrible, terrible thing that happened.
Well, right, because there was rumors that she had something to do with it.
She's pregnant.
She is pregnant, but she's married, right? Like,
fuck, I don't know.
I think she's married. Because that's what her comments were.
Yeah.
It was like, I'm very sad that they're getting divorced.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, currently pregnant with my, you know, my husband's baby or whatever. Like, it was bizarre. It does feel weird. This thing comes out looking like Pitt. Somebody's going to be in trouble.
Like, wait, it's the joke that Daniel Tosh talks about where in this hypothetical situation, Brad Pitt and David Beckham have sex with each other, and if your dick doesn't wiggle for a little bit, then you need to get the hell off of planet Earth, because you know that you'd get a hard-on for these two Greek gods making, oh, is that the new Brad Pitt, David Beckham, baby? That's Pitt cum?
Yeah, hard to feel sorry for her. She's always seemed like a weirdo. He's clearly a weirdo, too.
This is all
Hollywood stuff. I like Brad Pitt as an actor. Yeah. I've liked her and stuff too. But yeah. Like, man, you know what? Get divorced. It doesn't need to be all over the paper.
Yeah,
and that goes for TMZ and everybody else too. Leave them alone. Let them get divorced.
There are other things that we can talk about that have way more significance. I see the irony when I say that, listeners, humble listeners of The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, when we're doing podcasts about movies, when we could be doing podcasts about relief in insert the name of the country that's being destroyed right now. Right? However, look, these headlines that are just on, I just Googled Brangelina. And these are the first things that, Brangelina divorce, day two, what we know now. Brad Pitt and Angelina divorce. Adele says she, quote, couldn't give a fucking shit, end quote, from news.com. So anyway.
Good for you, Adele. Yeah, that's how I feel about it. I mean, I think there's probably a lot of people right now who know more about the Brangelina breakup than they do about the current presidential election or, you know, the most recent mass shooting or anything that probably should be more important that we probably should be paying attention to.
Yeah.
And like you said, I realize it's ironic we do a movie show, but I'm interested in movies. I'm interested in the product of, you know, these people like that put together an interesting piece of art, not necessarily interested in who Brad Pitt is going to be balls deep in next week or last week for that matter.
Right.
I assume he's banging someone already.
Well, look, you brought it up because we were talking about, what we were watching last night.
Yeah.
And it is significant because, listen, we talk about movies, we talk about television.
Sure. We can talk about all the stuff that's involved.
Talk about whatever the fuck you want, but it is entertainment. As I'm sure that you were watching last night, it was clearly...
Oh, my God. The debate was more entertaining than anything I've seen in... Definitely, if you're choosing between watching The Debate or Magnificent Seven, I would say watch The Debate. It's way more of a shootout.
According to Nielsen, The Debate averaged a total of 84 million viewers across 13 of the television channels that carried it live. Many millions also watched The Debate via live streams on the web.
Yeah, it's like Super Bowl numbers.
Most watched debate in American history.
And the least watched Monday Night Football in history.
Well, fuck the Falcons and fuck the Saints,
Falcons
obviously.
And Saints, too. Doesn't help. But,
yeah, of course. But anyway, yeah, we've got two more of these, so that'll be fun, I guess. And then there's a...
Two more between them, and there's a
vice presidential debate, right.
Right. The next one's on October 9th. It'll be a town hall setting. I think probably universally everybody is saying...
Trump
got destroyed during the debate.
I don't know about destroyed. I think he just kind of did himself in. But anyway.
Did himself in, sure. Probably a better way to say it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, you watch even Fox News. Like, I watched a little bit of Fox News last night and this morning, and even they were, like, you know, down on him. Like,
really?
Yeah, like, why? Yeah. Didn't mention the Clinton Foundation. Didn't mention Benghazi. Really didn't go after the emails. He was on the defensive all night long, which is an unusual position for him. And, you know... Like you said, he did it to himself, but you also have to give credit to her. She did a great job, too. So,
Okay, now I pause, and we're done, because I don't want to fucking talk about that shit anymore. Because we'll talk about something that is movie-oriented, but not in the way that you want, or that you're used
God.
To. Okay, so, Universal Studios in Orlando has opened up a new ride. I think this may be the first time that I remember that they're opening up a ride for a movie that has not even come out yet. Can you remember one?
opening a ride for a movie that hasn't even come out yet. No, yeah. I can't think. Yeah. I can't think of one.
So Skull Island: Rise of Kong comes out March of next year, and it's got Brie Larson, Tom Hiddleston, Sam Jackson, John Goodman, a bunch of other ones. A Kong, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I hope.
A giant ape.
Yeah, and they opened up the ride. They actually had opened up this ride over at Universal in Orlando. Gosh, I want to say it was in July or August. 3 hours to wait, originally.
Oh, when it first came out. I thought you were saying that you waited 3 hours.
No, we only waited an hour.
Yeah, that's not so bad. An hour's okay.
And we had gone over there, and that was primarily the reason why we were going over to Islands of Adventure. Was Kong's open, we want to check it out. That's the first thing that we want to check out completely.
You have season passes or something?
Yeah, we completely bypassed Harry Potter Land, which several people in our group are huge, you know, Harry Potter fans and whatnot. So we went over there. I will say that the walk up the queue, the line queue, to the actual ride entrance is pretty cool. Like, they put a lot of money into it. Except for, like, a couple things, I was like, oh my gosh, it's really frightening. And then you start getting closer and closer to the actual thing that you've been looking at from a distance. And, you know, there's, like, lighting and, you know, all this other stuff. And then you get to it and you realize, like, it's a shitty animatronic, you know, president with, you know, just...
Right. It's a robot with fur on it.
With latex and shit. Yeah, exactly. So, but it's very... it sets the mood. Sets the mood very well. There is one thing in the ride that does happen... Not in the ride. On the way to the ride, that happens, I do not want to spoil it. It remains a surprise.
In the ride or on the way to the ride?
On the way to the ride. It's
so it's not actually on the ride, it's in the, like, snaking line.
Correct.
Up to the,
it's pretty, I was like, all right, I like that. That's pretty good.
Well, that's cool that they do that. But the ride itself?
No, it's not good.
Not good?
It's
just one of these things. Is it kind of like the old King Kong where you just sort of sit in a car and, like... you're moved through the jungle or whatever. Like, in the old one, it was you were moved through the city. And,
yeah, you're...
Oh, there he is! He's under the Washington Bridge!
You're in the tram. You're in the L, right? The
right, in the old one. The old one, yes.
Right, and in this one, you're riding in... Gosh, I want to say, like, a 26 to 32-person capacity truck. And there's a plastic tarp that is right in front. It's the divider between the driver and the truck, so that you think that there's someone driving the car, but I think it's automated. I think it's just one of those self-driving,
of course,
because those are all crazy and everything. It's primarily 3D. They give you goggles or glasses before you go over there, but it's in such a way that there's too many people on that truck. So if you are, you know, it's one thing, like...
obstructs your 3D view.
Spider-Man, for example, only has, I think...
two rows? Three rows?
Two or three rows.
And it's tiered. It's, like, tiered.
Correct. So you've got... you always have, you know, good depth perception when it comes to, you know...
any seat is good.
This is not.
No?
Well, and it starts off fair enough, you know, like, they got animatronic shit going on, and then there's, like, one perspective, and you're looking at it, like, oh, that's pretty cool. Then you go down this procession. I'm not ruining anything for you guys. If you guys don't want to listen to what I'm about to say, you know, for the surprise or anything, but I'm saving you time. I'm saving you an hour out of your time, because as soon as we got off this ride, it was hashtag better than Kong this, hashtag better than Kong that,
what?
A fucking River Adventure at Jurassic Park, the new Hulk... motherfucking one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish over at Dr. Seuss Land is hashtag better than Kong.
Wow.
So you're driving down, it's just a straight path. And there's 3D all around. But again, the problem is that there's way too many people. I was on the very far end of one of the sides of the truck. So I got to see everything over here in 3D, which was really cool. But what Kong is doing when he finally, you know, he finally arrives and he's fighting with two or three T-Rexes, is that he'll jump over your bus, and then he's fighting on this side, and then all the people on the left-hand side are seeing all the stuff, and then you're like, oh, I can't see shit, what the fuck is going on? Unless you're in the middle. If you were sitting in the middle, you'd have kind of a good perspective, but again, you're missing a lot because they keep going back and forth, and it seems really, really lazy, right?
Yeah, it does. It sounds very much like Spider-Man, what you're describing.
No, Spider-Man, though, Spider-Man will spin. Spider-Man will give you the impression that, you know, you're rising, that you're falling.
This car doesn't spin at all.
This is not a car.
It's just like,
this is not a car. This is a fucking bus. It is a truck that has 30 motherfuckers on this thing, and it doesn't do anything like, ooh, it's... We're falling down the cliff. Like, I never felt like I was falling down the cliff.
It's weird that they're doing this with Kong. Like, they just had, like, a massive hit with the whole Harry Potter thing that they did, right?
Right.
Like, Universal, like, people literally are buying tickets and season passes just for that and going back multiple times.
Yes.
King Kong doesn't have that kind of pull. It seems like they would be making a ride out of some other movie in recent years that they have the rights to that would get people there.
Yeah.
It's like King Kong kind of feels like, oh, yeah, that movie that's been around for almost 100 years.
Right, right. Well, I mean, they are doing the Fast and Furious Supercharged ride. That's opening up, and I think...
Is that a ride or a show?
Who the fuck knows? I have no idea. But, you know, okay, that's fine. You want to do something like that.
Yeah.
But you have an opportunity, you know, and here's the other thing. So I went with Royce and Marie from Hippo Juice. They're coming up next on warlikeradio.com.
Woo-woo!
So we're with them, and Royce made a very good point. We're riding Jurassic Park, and it was fun. All the animatronic dinosaurs are just, like, melting in the sun
because
they've been out there 20 years just baking to death. But it was still hashtag better than Kong. And secondly, he pointed out, they just had a fucking hit with Jurassic World. Why wouldn't you, you know...
Absolutely. Listen,
Sir Richard Attenborough, we salute you, but it's Chris Pratt time. And he could make a killer, you know, 2 or 3 minute little, you know, B-movie where he's exploring and throw Bryce Dallas Howard in there and get... What's his name? Jimmy Buffett to run around with the margaritas like he did in the movie. But there's nothing like that. There's just like one little stand that has Jurassic Island merch and shit. But I go back to Kong. So it's a straight line. It doesn't do anything. Doesn't flip. Doesn't turn around like it does in Spider-Man, which is hashtag better than Kong. And when you finally see King Kong, I believe that they used the same statue that they had used.
It's the old one that's been sitting in one of their,
it's
like...
With a new carpet, new fur sewn onto it. So...
Wow.
It's not good.
You only see him once?
You only see him... Well, you see him...
The rest of the time it's animatronic, or it's like a 3D screen or whatever.
Yeah.
That is lame.
Yeah, and they do, like, the spray and the wind and, you know, like, the air puffs and everything. Like, oh my gosh, you're getting hit by bugs. Oh my gosh, he's breathing on you. Look, they spent so much money on the entrance to get to the actual ride, you would have thought that the ride was like, man, this is going to be a fucking awesome ride, and there's another thing in a box that's right around the queue right before you get your 3D glasses, and, oh, that's fucking disgusting. I can't wait to see it in real time, and it's not there.
That's
it's all 3D
lame.
Shit.
You know what? Honestly, I'm saying, why don't they do some other property that they have? But Royce has got a point. Like, Jurassic World is their number
one. You just had... No one was predicting that movie made all that movie, right?
And it's their number one grossing movie ever. But they don't have a lot of other properties that they could make a ride out of that they either don't already have or haven't in the past. So some of the other big movies, like... Okay, so Jurassic World, E.T., which they used to have. It was a lame-ass ride.
Yeah.
Best part about that ride is you could... give E.T. any name you wanted.
Goodbye, Fubar.
You can give him any name you wanted.
Goodbye, Vagine.
Poopy Pants.
Poopy Pants. Poor adult.
You can give him any name, and then E.T. would say it at the end.
Yeah.
Furious 7, as you said, they're making that one.
Yeah.
The Grinch, they have that ride. Jaws,
right.
They had that ride. Speaking of Jaws,
yeah.
Of all the properties that have been remade and rebooted and resharded out
to
us.
You could do a badass.
Why would they not remake Jaws at this point? You know, or not, or reboot Jaws, or make a new ride.
Did you see The Shallows?
Did not see The Shallows.
I heard it wasn't that bad.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
Blake Lively, like, and but it actually was a decent hit.
But it would be a great ride. It would be a great movie to reboot. Don't get me wrong. I don't want them to do it.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised they haven't.
You don't think it's because of Spielberg, though? Like, Spielberg, don't fucking touch my shit. Like, dude, get the fuck away from me right now.
They did Jurassic World. That's Spielberg. Oh, shit, they essentially are, like, making new Star Wars movies without... Like, I don't think that...
But wait a minute. I know that Jurassic Park and all that was written by Michael Crichton, and Jaws is the book by...
Peter Benchley.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Damn it. I don't have a rebuttal for that. I don't know why Spielberg is like, don't make Jaws, make whatever the hell.
But back to rides, I don't think that they... I think they could make a badass new Jaws ride. And people probably would be more interested in that just because of their inherent fear of sharks. There's not an inherent fear of gigantic apes, you know, that we all naturally have.
Well, not according to Trump.
After that, you got Dr. Seuss's The Lorax. Back to the Future, they've already had Mummy Returns. Mummy Returns, one of the great rides, or The Mummy or whatever.
Yeah.
That's one of the great rides I've ever been on, and I have no love for the Mummy movie. But the first time I ever went on the fucking Mummy, it was like, yeah, okay, yeah, we're riding around. This thing's probably going to go fast or go down a big hill at some point. And the fucking floor falls out and flames are all over the place.
Fuck,
and starts
yeah.
going like really super. It's a friggin' roller coaster all of a sudden.
Oh, my, okay. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
50 Shades of Grey ride.
Heh!
Straight out of Compton. It's just a Universal weird movie. Make that into a ride. Oh my God.
Okay, so I'm glad that you brought it up, because the other thing that I wanted to mention was that, so apparently Royce and Marie, they've been married for many, many years, and they used to meet when Royce lived in Miami and Marie lived in Gainesville. They used to meet in Orlando at Islands Adventure and Universal.
Right.
And while Royce waited for Marie to get to where he was at, I guess he spent his time writing Curse of the Mummy, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
He rode this thing like 200 times.
It's a sweet-ass ride.
I know this because we all sat in the front row, and he is quoting word for word everything that, like, there, your end is my beginning. There is no escape. Your soul is mine. Hey, I hope the ceiling doesn't go on fire. Oh, no, the ceiling's on fire. And he had every single mark, and by the time we got off, it was Tina and Apple Teeny and I were just... That's fantastic.
Wait, just that ride?
Just that
he
ride.
Just rode that ride over and over?
Yeah.
Well, he couldn't, like...
200 times, apparently. It's a fucking fun ride.
It is
ride.
A good ride. It's a really good ride. Yeah.
If I was going to ride anything 200 times, I guess it would be... I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to ride... I'm not going to ride Simpsons ride 200 times.
Simpsons ride.
I'll puke my guts out and then have a Krusty Burger afterwards.
Some of the old terrible rides that they had back in the day. Like, remember the Twister show or the Ghostbusters show?
It's still there.
What?
Twister's still there.
Twister show's still there?
Twister is there. Look, Twister is there.
Holy shit.
Disaster and Earthquake are no longer there because they've been replaced by...
Earthquake was badass, I'm sorry.
Earthquake was badass. Disaster is highly underrated because it had Chris Walken.
Wait, what's Disaster?
Disaster, it's basically just, you're in a disaster movie, Chris Walken is the director, his assistant is having you film, like, different goofy things that they're selecting people out of the audience.
I've
like,
never been on this. When? How long? Has this always been there?
No, it's gone now.
Oh, it's gone now.
Yeah, because they're replacing it with Supercharged Fast and Furious. But it's Chris Walken. He's like, and I want you to stand over here. You're going to act really, really good. Falling out of the sky. I love it! More cowbell! And all this shit.
God, I totally missed this one.
It's really, really fucking funny. It's really funny. And then there's a cameo by The Rock in there somewhere.
They had the Alfred Hitchcock thing. They don't have that anymore, right?
No.
That was so awesome. And, tell me, I'm going to be really mad.
Okay.
By the way, I don't know if you can tell, yes. I haven't been to Universal Studios in like 20
apparently
years.
Apparently not. But I think I know what question you're about to ask. And I'm going to say that, yes, Terminator 2 is still there.
Oh, no, I wasn't going to say that. Okay. Although I do like that ride.
Okay.
Our show.
Not a one thing has been touched.
The special effects show.
It's still there.
Yeah!
It's still there.
The telepod, they still doing the Brundlefly thing?
It's on the... Yes, they are. It's on the corner of... it's right across the street from the diner.
That's awesome.
Catty Corner 2 Transformers.
Yeah.
Transformers. Well, Transformers are... Okay, look.
I've never been on that.
Even Transformers is hashtag better than Kong.
They used to have Back to the Future. They used to have Jaws.
Yes.
Yeah. None of that.
And they got Fear Factor. And they got a show that you can do that.
Fear Factor.
Yeah, you can eat worms and bathe in blood. Or I don't think there's any blood involved, but you can do all the gross shit that Seth Rogen was always making these people do.
Right. Just chomping on cockroaches and stuff.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I gotta go to Universal.
You have to go to... We got season passes, man. Come on.
Yeah, I got Busch Gardens passes right now, so I gotta... Maybe next year we'll do that instead.
Okay, we'll go to Universal, and we'll go to a Bucks game, because that's exactly what you did on Sunday.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we win. As we move on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, let's also continue with our never-ending saga. It's the segment that we affectionately like to call... Finally! And finally, Chris, you don't think that I pay attention to you.
What did you see?
I saw Bull Durham. Bull Durham.
Finally!
I know. I'm not a baseball guy either.
I'm not either. Not at all. Doesn't matter.
But it is very... Man, this is about as 80s as you can get.
Oh, it's a very 80s movie.
About as 80s...
But they don't make movies like this anymore.
They don't. And it's not cliched because it was made too early for it to be a cliche, but it's the story of a catcher, Crash Davis, and he is signed on to the Durham Bulls, to mentor the new hotshot pitcher, Nuke,
right.
Otherwise known as Tim Robbins, who's fucking funny.
He's so good.
Oh my gosh. What was really funny, too, I didn't know if you noticed, So when we went to the Bucks game on Sunday, and Joshua Jason, they were playing the Battleship, you know, beer pong shit.
Yeah.
And he was wearing a Durham Bulls shirt.
Oh, I didn't know.
I was like, I just saw that movie last night. He's like, oh shit, that's a really good movie and everything else.
Tim Robbins has that line when he, when Susan Sarandon's like coaxing him into bed and he takes his clothes off and stuff. She's like, take off your socks. He's like, my socks? It's cold in here. Like, his face, like he's totally like, I'm not taking my socks off. Like, I love that line.
What does he know about being cool? I'm cool. I drive a Porsche. He's old.
Yeah.
What does he know?
And also, ironically, you know, Kevin Costner giving the speech about all the things he likes. No, I believe in the this, I believe in the that. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. He goes on to play Jim Garrison and JFK a couple years ago, trying to prove a conspiracy. It's a funny little foreshadowing.
I believe in softcore pornography, and I also believe in long, wet, passionate kisses that last three straight days.
Yeah, amen.
Which is kind of ironic, because the last 20 minutes of this movie is essentially softcore pornography when he and Susan Sarandon's hot, by the way.
She's still hot.
Is this the movie that her and Tim Robbins hooked up? Because they've
I think it must have been. Yeah. Because this movie was what, like 86?
87.
87, yeah. It must have been. And then no longer together, right? I don't think they're together anymore.
I don't know.
I feel like they've each started boning other people.
I mean, they're always kind of those. They were always kind of that wacky couple, anyway. I mean, you almost kind of have to. Well, okay, look. Tim Robbins is Tim Robbins wacky? He's kind of wacky.
He feels wacky.
And then Susan Sarandon, she was in Rocky Horror. Anybody that was in Rocky Horror is goofy.
Yeah.
So to me,
she's definitely a little bit goofy.
Yeah. Still hot though.
Still very hot.
Super,
yeah.
Super hot. Yeah.
Now this movie's so funny. They don't make movies like this anymore. First of all, they don't make a lot of romantic comedies anymore. Remember when we were young, like in the 80s and even into the 90s. There was a lot of romantic comedies, like probably, you know, 3-4 movies at the theater at any given time, it was a romantic comedy.
Yeah, While You Were Sleeping, Kate and Leopold.
Yeah, and a million other ones that you don't even remember.
Yeah.
And most of them were from the point of view of the female. Occasionally you would get one from the point of view of a male, and Bull Durham is that, you know. It's not just a romantic comedy. I mean, it's mostly comedy. It's got a little romance in there.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see a movie like that. Splash is another one of those great 80s movies, romantic comedies.
Well, actually, I feel like I learned a lot just watching the movie about baseball, because, again, I'm not a baseball guy.
Yeah, you get a little bit of, you know.
But it was enjoyable for a baseball movie, and apparently they got Kevin Costner cast because, you know, he was, you know, athletic enough in order to, I guess, while they were filming the movie, he actually did hit 2 home runs, and it just happened to be on film.
Yeah.
So
you can't even make a movie about baseball without him just showing up on the set. He'll make sandwiches for everybody. He doesn't even need to be in it. Like, he's into baseball movies so much. He's
shit,
like,
did he ride a horse?
Yeah, you take out baseball and horses from his movies, and you're left with him playing the corpse in The Big Chill. That's it.
Yeah, so this was basically the Baseball Whisperer, in my opinion. The other thing that I kind of noticed is that, so he had a teammate that was rubbing rosary beads on his bat because he had like some bad juju and everything. And then I wrote Major League ?
Yeah.
So that was made in '89.
Yeah, a couple years later, but possibly the best sports movie ever made.
Major League?
Yes.
Over this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, I like Bull Durham. It's a very good movie. Yeah. I 100% recommend people see it if they haven't seen it. Major League's one of the great comedies of all time. Like,
yeah.
Excuse me. Major League has so many good lines in it. Like, so, like, just line after line after line after line. I don't know how long it's been since you've seen it, but you go back and watch it, and it's just joke after joke after joke and after joke.
Anytime Bob Uecker's on the mic.
Bob Uecker. Everybody.
I know, but he was like, you can't say that on the radio. Oh, who gives a shit? No one's listening.
You put snot on the ball? I don't have an arm like yours. I gotta put whatever I can on the ball. Love that movie.
The other movie that I saw,
Jubo,
was Trainspotting.
Yes! Finally!
Finally!
Literally 20 years later.
20 years later. Hour and a half. I thought it was going to be longer.
Is it only an hour and a half?
Only an hour and a half,
Back in the day, every movie didn't have to be 2.5 fucking hours like it does today.
I'm glad it wasn't 2.5 hours.
I am too!
Because it's also really fucking sad, very, very dark. Like, it's...
Oh, yeah.
It brings to light, you know, it's the most successful Scottish movie ever made, according to Rotten... some poll that they had in Scotland. It's the most popular Scottish movie of all time.
That's strange.
Go figure. But it, you know, deals with four mates that are also heavy, heavy drug users.
Yep.
Now, here's the thing that I kind of noticed, and I went back and Googled, there's a couple of articles that allude to this, but apparently this movie came out in 96, and then OK Computer came out in 97,
yeah,
roughly 18 months apart. The Choose Life speech that Ewan McGregor says kind of reminded me of Fitter, Happier from
Fitter,
OK Computer.
Fitter, happier, more productive. Yeah, it does a little bit. I mean, I can see that. Maybe it was inspired by Trainspotting a little bit.
Yeah, I was, well, why have all that shite when you just have heroin? Kind of sounds like a pig in a cage on antibiotics. The soundtrack, I've heard a million damn times. That's why we opened up with Iggy Pop's Lust for Life. But I've never seen
it. You've heard the soundtrack, or you've heard a million times that it's one of the greatest soundtracks of all time?
Yes.
That's what you've heard.
That is what I've heard.
You didn't grow up listening to the soundtrack like so many other people did.
Well, no, I mean,
it would be strange. I mean, you've heard the Lust for Life song, but like all the other songs in
Born Slippy with Elastica on there. Fuck, I forgot Kelly MacDonald's in there.
Yeah, Kelly MacDonald.
Like, oh my gosh, you were so adorable.
And this movie introduced everybody to Kelly MacDonald, to
Johnny Lee Miller.
Johnny Lee Miller to Ewan McGregor. I mean,
yeah, Robert Carlyle.
Robert Carlyle and Danny Boyle. I mean, they had made Shallow Grave before this.
Yeah.
He had made that movie with Ewan McGregor. And Christopher Cluston. Most people didn't see that. I mean, that was sort of a little video movie that you would get from the video store back in the day. A couple people saw it, but nobody... This was, like, introduced the world to all these people.
Yeah,
and it's really, really good.
Spud's girlfriend's father is the uncle from Harry Potter. The mean uncle from Harry Potter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. I caught that, and I was like, oh, shit, isn't that the guy from Harry Potter? Is it his father? And then Tina corrected me, it's the uncle. It's good. Couple things though, it's fucking
it's dark. It's tough to watch.
It's okay, and again, I'm coming from the perspective of I've heard about the movie, and so when the dead baby is crawling up on the ceiling, I'm not surprised, but it's still off-putting, especially when the head starts turning around and that uncanny valley starts hovering over, and he's fucking screaming his ass off.
And that's just a like dope sick dream sequence. That scene is very disturbing. Because the baby does die, although you don't necessarily see it crawling on the ceiling. You just see sort of its purple leg or whatever in the crib.
Yeah.
More disturbing than that, to me, always was the scene...
In the toilet?
Tommy. When they find Tommy.
Oh,
like,
Jesus.
And he's talking... At the funeral, they're talking what happened, and they just sort of show the shot of him, like, face down in his own vomit, and, like, the little kitten is still running around. He dies of toxoplasmosis from eating cat shit or whatever, you know? Jesus. Like, no, a very upsetting movie. But... Also a very funny movie, it's got a great message, like, you know, choose life. That's the whole sort of message of the movie. And Renton does choose life. He does choose to get out of this situation, but they sort of get together for one last score at the end of the movie, you know, like, and that's when he sort of rips him off, but he leaves Spud some money. I love Spud opening up the locker and like...
He's like, all right, there's still some hope left in the world. And they're making a sequel to this, right?
Well, they wrote a book sequel. Irvin Welsh wrote a book.
There's a trailer for this.
Oh, yeah. No, there is. But that movie that they are making is not the book. There was a sequel to Trainspotting.
Okay.
Was originally a book by Irvin Welsh.
Yeah.
He wrote a sequel to the book called Porno, where I guess they... I never read it. But I guess they get together and sort of run a porno shop.
Yeah.
This sequel is, I guess, partially based on that book, but not entirely based on that book. So we'll find out. But, you know, I don't give a shit. I'll see it. It's Danny Boyle and it's the whole cast back, so I'm in. How great is Robert Carlyle in this movie, though?
We all
know a guy like that. We all grew up with a guy like that.
The type of guy that he was kind of acting like, he reminded me of Ben Kingsley from Sexy Beast.
Yes.
He just wants to pick a fight with everybody, and they will lose because...
Right. Because he's insane.
He's fucking insane.
Just full of anger.
Yeah.
We all sort of have known a guy like that at some point.
Yeah,
He plays it so perfectly. I'm playing like Paul fucking Newman, by the way.
Oh, that was the other thing, too. I learned more about Sean Connery and James Bond movies than actually watching...
I think that's how we got on this subject last time we were on the show.
Yeah,
we were
talking about Sean Connery.
Despite the Academy Award. That means fuck all. It's a sympathy vote.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, shit, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, great dialogue. Fantastic music, all those good actors. It's a really, really good movie. And it's one, you walked away from it thinking, wow, it's hard to watch, it's depressing. But the more you watch it, the more you sort of enjoy it. It's not a hard movie to watch.
No, it's jarring.
Repeated viewings.
Yeah, it's jarring, especially when, you know, I guess when you are thinking about how awful these people, they're all awful. They're all awful human beings, even right. Renton. And he's got redeemable qualities, but I mean, compared to all the other ones, and he's, yeah, and, you know, Spud's just dumb. He went to jail, and Sick Boy would do the same thing that I'm doing right now, except he didn't think of it first.
He didn't think of it
and
first.
And Begbie's just fucking insane. I don't give a fuck, what you know, about him. But they're still his mates, and he cares about them, and then you ultimately care about them. It's like, you know, our friends and people that we've hung out with before where, like, you son of a fucking bitch. Oh, fine, I'll bail you out of jail. You get one fucking out of jail. That's it.
Right.
That type of shit. So, you know, I still can't understand how I didn't go with you guys to...
I have no idea. So, I mean, we all went from the movie theater... We worked at the movie theater, and we all took a big trip over to Brandon to see it.
Shit.
Everybody saw this movie back in 1996. Yeah, I think you were the only one, like, in our generation.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, right?
It is.
Here's the other thing that I watched, and it's not anything that has to do with our segment, finally! But it is something that, I don't know, we were hanging out on Saturday, my friend Jesse and Emily came over, Jesse who made this amazing Vigo, that is Vigo the Carpathian, Ramcat Jackson / Mark Nixon portrait that I'm looking at with Chris right now. And
it's pretty awesome.
I will post that October 1st. You have to follow us on Facebook and Twitter in order to see what the heck I'm talking about. Which, by the way, Chris, I didn't know if you know this, but our followership on Facebook jumped up 50%.
Whoa.
We are now at 45 followers, where last week we were at 30, and so thank you for your patronage.
Woohoo!
So, but the other movie that I saw, and it's an hour and 10 minutes, and it was funnier, more violent, more coherent, and actually fun than its live-action, real-person counterpart Suicide Squad, and that's Batman Assault on Arkham.
Everybody's nuts about this thing. Everybody that I have sort of read that has seen it said it was really good.
It's, okay, look.
It's a cartoon.
It's a cartoon. It is good, but when you compare it to Suicide Squad, it's like, man, I've just had all this dirt in my mouth for like 4 months. Oh, it's water. Oh, it's so good. Oh, just flush it out. Just clean my palate. It's, you should watch it.
But it's a Batman. I mean, it's got Batman in it.
It does have.
So it is not just the Suicide Squad or just the villains. I mean, it's a Batman movie.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's picture Suicide Squad, but instead of Killer Croc, you got King Shark. Instead of Slipknot, you've got Black Spider. And then instead of... Who was the other one? Either the Enchantress or Kitana, you get Killer Frost.
Hmm.
The chick.
Yeah, I've never
Everybody... Deadshot, Joker, Harley Quinn... Captain Boomerang, they're all better. They're all the Captain Boomerang can actually do shit and is saying stuff that makes a lot more sense.
Not just throwing a boomerang.
Not just throwing a boomerang.
Never catching it.
Viola Davis's character. What the hell is her name? The one from the Secretary.
Amanda Waller.
Amanda Waller. She's in it. Batman's in it. Commissioner Gordon's in it. It's an hour. It's like an hour and 10 minutes. Like I don't understand. Like why? Okay. There was an article that I read, and I'm not going to find it, but in so many words, long story short, it was one of the heads of Warner Brothers and DC Movies is saying, you know what, we probably could have done a better job with Batman vs. Superman and Suicide Squad. I would encourage all of their people that are working on these Justice League and Batman movies, just fucking watch The Killing Joke or watch Assault on Arkham. Like, you can tell a coherent story and figure out all the rest shit, because...
It's weird, because they've done it before, like, with these animated movies and with the Chris Nolan movies, like, they've made good DC movies.
Yeah.
And now it's like they just can't do it, and they're getting good writers, so it's got to be studio interference. It's got to be.
You've seen Batman the Animated Series, right?
Yeah.
And that was good.
Yeah.
I mean, for a kid's show...
It was beloved by our generation.
Yeah, it was, you know, like, dark and poignant at times. And then Batman, Mask of the Phantasm... That came out.
Yeah.
And then,
which was just sort of the same thing as the animated show, right? I mean, it was like a continuation of that. A movie of that. Yeah.
And then Batman Under the Red Hood. That was the other one that I remember. And that one, like, they're all, like, pretty decent.
Yeah.
Like, for comparing, say, like, if you want to watch that, or if you want to watch Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, clearly there's a choice that needs to be made.
Well, even the comics, like, here's where I side with the comic book nerds, which is I've read two Batman graphic novels.
Yeah.
I read Batman, whatever it's called, old Batman.
The Dark Knight Returns?
Yeah, that one. And I read Arkham Asylum.
Okay.
Like, and they're both really good. Like, it would be very easy to make another Batman. And by the way, Chris Nolan made 3 Batman movies, and Tim Burton made 2 good Batman movies.
Yeah.
So it's not that hard. I don't know why they're making it so hard.
I don't know. I don't know. I have you seen or read The Killing Joke?
No.
You can borrow that.
Yeah.
Because I have that. And it's on par with what I saw when I saw it, like, way back in August and everything. So it's good. I mean, but point being is that I saw Assault on Arkham over the weekend, and it was decent.
I mean, do you have any confidence whatsoever? And I read the same article you did about the head of Warner Brothers, and he was really just sort of talking about all the Warner Brothers comic book movies they've made so far, all the DC comic movies they've made so far.
Yeah.
Do you have any confidence whatsoever after them effing up Batman, Superman, Suicide Squad? Do you have any confidence whatsoever that they're going to make a good Aquaman movie?
No.
I mean,
okay, look.
Hey, look, Vinny Chase tried, and even he couldn't make a good Aquaman.
At this point, summer's over. I don't have to worry about, like, oh, is the comic book movie going to be good? Because I've got all this other stuff that I can watch.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm completely distracted by that.
None of their other movies are going to be coming out this year. I don't think there's any superhero movies coming out the rest of the year. Oh, no, wait. We are going to get
Doctor Strange
with butterscotch cock and balls. But, yeah, I mean, I have no confidence that when these movies come out that they'll be any good whatsoever. I mean, Wonder Woman, the preview looks good.
Sure.
It's going to be trash. I'm betting it's going to be trash.
The previews are always good.
Preview looked good for Suicide Squad. Preview looked good for Batman versus Superman. Preview looked good for, you know, everything they've made so far.
I mean, all I know is that they're on a streak, and it's not a good one, and they need to do whatever they've been doing differently so that they don't have this continuation of the streak.
Yeah.
So
this is the kind of streak that you find in white Fruit of the Looms.
That's poo-poo. That's not good.
Yeah, exactly.
So as we wrap up on the real thing on morelikeradio.com, it is time for, unfortunately, the other segment that Chris has deemed significant
death.
So rest in peace, Curtis Hanson.
What? Oh, Curtis Hanson.
Hanson, American film director, producer, screenwriter. Died September 20th, 2016, due to natural causes.
Tell me that you've seen L.A. Confidential.
I have.
Oh my God, I was about to come over the table at you and strangle you out with strangle you with one of your girlfriend's bras hanging over here.
No stroking, for that is the hand that rocks the cradle, was directed in 1992.
I'm going to come over this table and stroke you out, buddy.
We're going to jam you. We're going to jam you so hard.
You'll learn a lesson then. You'll see all Curtis Hanson's movies. Yeah, L.A. Confidential's the bomb. Wonder Boys, 8 Mile, the criminally underrated Bad Influence with James Spader and Rob Lowe.
Ah. Like
back when Rob Lowe was actually, you know, an actor that people took somewhat seriously.
Okay.
Really good director. L.A. Confidential, if he didn't make anything else, L.A. Confidential is just such a massive undertaking. He did such a tremendous job with it that he has a place in my heart forever just because of that.
Yeah, I mean, he won the screenplay Oscar, adapted screenplay Oscar.
Yeah, because that book is like was sort of notoriously unfilmable, according to many, many people at the time, because it's just so massive with so many characters, and it's, you know, just a labyrinth of different stories and characters, and he really did an unbelievable job of turning it into a great screenplay and an incredible movie.
Fuck, he also directed The River Wild. Man, that's a good movie, too.
Yeah, it is.
Fuck, with David Strathairn, Meryl Streep, and Kevin Bacon, right?
Yep.
Yes,
all
right.
And Joseph Mazzello from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, you're right.
Timmy.
Did you see he is Orlean's husband in Adaptation?
Curtis Hanson played Susan Orlean's husband?
Yes.
No shit, I did not know that.
Yeah, it says it right here.
That's very interesting.
And he was also on an episode of he directed an episode of Greg the Bunny.
Yeah. That's
called Piddler on the Roof.
Piddler on the Roof. That's really random.
But yeah, he also, I mean, he directed, Wonder Boys is really good.
Yeah, I love Wonder Boys.
And then, of course, 8 Mile. Did you like 8 Mile?
No, not really. And I'm a fan of Eminem's music, or anyway, I was a fan of his first 3 albums. I didn't care for 8 Mile that much, really.
Really?
Nah, not really. I mean,
even when it came out? Because that was kind of at the peak of his powers, and then, you know, like, he kind of waned with the drug use.
It was, and I sort of watched it and thought, like, I don't know, it just wasn't terribly memorable, but it just always felt like kind of a cliche story, like, you know, young guy coming up against a lot of, you know, he's getting oppressed by everything around him, his mom and his girlfriend and the man, and he's going to rap his way out of it. And it just sort of felt very predictable and kind of just went through the motions of all the things you would expect from a movie like that. Nothing surprising, nothing. And I didn't think he was much of an actor. I mean, did anybody?
Yeah. No, I mean, if he was, then he would be doing something right now, like Mark Wahlberg or The Rock or, you know, one of those crossover
exactly.
artists.
What about Eminem always appealed to me was the funny part of his music, you know? I don't like Stan, you know?
Right.
I like the funnier song.
No, I like it when he's rapping about killing people, but in a fun way, in a fun and wacky way.
Right.
So,
chainsaws and Vicodin. Yeah.
That's right. Ning, ning, ning. Hey, did you know? I'm going to blow your mind right now.
Blow me.
his mom, Stephanie, who's played by Kim Basinger in 8 Mile.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is her boyfriend? Who plays her boyfriend?
Fuck. I don't even remember her having a boyfriend.
Michael Shannon.
What? I got to watch 8 Mile again.
Stephanie's indolent, semi-live-in boyfriend, Greg.
Yeah.
Michael Shannon, he's everywhere, I'm telling you.
He is everywhere. I love that guy.
That's fucking crazy. And
possibly my favorite working actor.
And then I also do know that, you know, he's in a lot of stuff now, has been in a lot of stuff with the Marvel movies and then the night before, but Anthony Mackie.
Oh, yeah.
Papa Doc, dude.
Yeah, I do remember him in that.
Yeah.
And then he was in The Hurt Locker.
That's right, he was in The Hurt Locker. Yeah, rest in peace, Curtis Hanson.
Yeah, sorry to hear it. Too bad. He was like 70? Like
yeah. Yeah, died of natural causes, though. I mean, you know.
Yeah, when they say that, I don't know what that means, natural causes.
He didn't shit it. Well, I guess he would shit himself.
Yeah, I mean, natural causes, like, everything's natural. Like, you know, I mean, unless he got killed by an alien laser beam, everything else is technically natural, you know? Like, I don't know what that means.
Gotcha.
It's gotta be something.
Well, Chris, as always, it
choked
is...
Choked on a ham sandwich or something.
Not choked on a ham sandwich. Don't say that, because Teen is doing a show with the Summer of Love 60s music live show, and she's doing Mamas and the Papas. She's doing California Dreamin', so...
Oh. Did you know that Mama Cass and Keith Moon died in the same apartment?
No.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. It was owned by Harry Nilsson. Mama Cass died there. A couple years later, he rented it out to Keith Moon. Keith Moon died there.
Holy shit. Yeah. Oh, and what was the last thing that Keith Moon said before he died?
If you don't like it, you can fuck off. That was Keith Moon's last words were, if you don't like it, you can fuck. Basically, he came home drunk. Mm-hmm. He was taking some medication to try and stop drinking. It took too much of it.
Yeah.
He asked his girlfriend to make him a sandwich or steak and eggs, I think it was. And then...
steak and eggies.
She protested a little bit, and his last words to her were, if you don't like it, you can fuck off.
Jesus.
He fell asleep. She woke him up the next day, or didn't.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, if you don't like The Real Thing on morelikeradio.com, I mean, you can fuck off, but we would prefer that you like us, and so like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter, The Real Thing, RELTHINGMLR. Hippo Juice is coming up next. We leave you with the instrumental version of 8 Mile Road from the Academy Award-winning movie 8 Mile, because Eminem won an Oscar before Leo and Martin Scorsese.
Crazy.
So there you go. Chris Whedon, thank you so much.
Likewise, thank you.
I am Mark Nixon. Enjoy your week. We will talk to you.